This is Jay Sekulow. Will the president declare an emergency to build the southern border protection?
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Does President Trump have the ability, have the authority to declare a national emergency, have the military build his wall?
Well, unfortunately, the short answer is yes. There is a provision in law that says the president can declare an emergency. It's been done a number of times, but primarily it's been done to build facilities in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
You can't really see through a concrete wall. They want to be able to see who's on the other side of the wall. Because if they're here and you have about a 12-inch concrete wall and you have people on the other side, but you can't see what's over there, it's very dangerous. A see-through wall made out of steel is far stronger than a concrete wall. I think, I'm not sure, but I think that's what the Democrats prefer. And if it can get them there, I'm okay.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Well, you've seen it all over the weekend news, and that is, will the president declare a national emergency by presidential proclamation, which is covered under 50 U.S.C. 1621, in order to get the border security situation resolved? In other words, do you declare a national emergency under authority, statutory authority, there's constitutional authority as well, in order to move this forward when you've got this kind of gridlock going on right now and you're in day 17 of a shutdown? So does the president have this authority, and do you want him to exercise it? We're going to ask you that question. We're going to talk about it at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. The president has said that he could declare a national emergency to get the border security in place, and the question will be then, will they challenge it? Although the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, under the Democrats, Adam Smith, had this to say about it.
Does President Trump have the ability, have the authority to declare a national emergency, have the military build his wall?
Well, unfortunately, the short answer is yes. There is a provision in law that says the president can declare an emergency. It's been done a number of times, but primarily it's been done to build facilities in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Well, there you have it. So there's an acknowledgement that at least there's colorable, what's called colorable, at law, colorable authority for this. Politically, this would move the needle.
Yeah, I mean, so it's the National Emergencies Act of 1976. It says presidents are allowed to take a unilateral action in times of crisis. It's codified at 50 U.S. Code 1621, Declaration of National Emergency by President. So you can look that up as well. It's pretty simple. The question is defining national emergency. Now, of course, as you heard, the Democrat congressman, who is the new chair of the House Armed Services Committee, says the president can take this action under the existing law, but then it can be challenged in court. What he means is that you can then challenge in court is whether or not there is a national emergency as written in the code. And so does this qualify what's happening on the border as a national emergency? Now, we were talking about this. There are funds available to the president, discretionary funds, Wes, available in the military budget that would build, almost hit the $25 billion mark.
Yeah, exactly. The Pentagon, of course, has a very enlarged budget this year, thankfully. But in that budget, and a lot of the monies at the Department of Defense are appropriated for specific projects, but there is $20 billion in the present defense budget that is simply designated for military construction. And other than that broad category, the Department of Defense has complete discretion of what they build and how they build it. And so, technically, yes, he's the commander in chief, and the money is there, $20 billion worth.
So I think the question is going to be, by the way, the vice president over the weekend was negotiating with staff from the House and Senate. I think this is going to be a real issue, and I think a real showdown. The question is going to be, will the president exercise his national security authority by declaring a national emergency? And this is codified under 50 U.S.C., United States Code, Section 1621, Declaration of an Emergency by President. And we'll talk about what that means. We want to know your reaction to it, too. 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110.
Go to ACLJ.org. There's a lot of information up, too, about what we have filed with that doctor in Ohio, Laura Klob, and more information coming out about that likely soon as well. They'll be sharing with you on the broadcast. So, again, ACLJ.org. Support the work of the ACLJ. Find out about all the work we're doing in the new year at ACLJ.org and give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Do you support the president in this move?
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Defending human life. Standing up for our good friend Israel. Working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington. Battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world. And a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Okay, we just got word that the president's going to be visiting the southern border on Thursday. We're talking about whether the president will, in fact, utilize a declaration of national emergency under 50 U.S.C. Code, you know, it's United States Code, Section 1621, and it authorizes the president to exercise during periods of national emergency various actions that he can take, including that would include, of course, in our view, legally speaking, the ability to utilize funds. And there are funds available to appropriate to construct the border security fence or wall or steel slats, whatever it's being called now. But the fact is it's a border security situation. I asked Harry Hutchinson, our director of policy, during the break, what his thoughts were on this, both from a policy perspective and also the legal issue. There's going to be a challenge. And I'm sure there will be a challenge, although, again, very important to point out that the chairman, the new chairman of the House committee that's going to be dealing with this, that's Armed Services Committee, said the president does have the authority to do this. There'll be a challenge. The challenge will be in the Ninth Circuit. And I will tell you this, the American Center for Law and Justice will be in that challenge, defending the position that the president has the authority to protect our borders under his authority as commander-in-chief, and certainly that's constitutionally, and statutorily under 50 U.S.C. Section 1621. I'm sure it will be defended by the Department of Justice vigorously, but we'll be in there as well on behalf of our members. So a lot to discuss here. But, Harry, let's talk about that aspect of it, both the policy perspective here of the declaration of national emergency and the second phase.
Yes. So if we actually look at history, history isn't a good guide. It's important to note that presidents of the United States have historically invoked emergency powers at their discretion. Then there was an attempt in 1976 to curtail the practice to some extent, but still nonetheless to provide the president with emergency powers under the 1976 Act that Jordan just referenced, the National Emergencies Act of 1976. So I suggested that the key question was whether or not there was indeed an emergency. And I think it's clear beyond question that a case can be made that there is an emergency situation on the southern border. If we look at the numbers of people that are attempting to cross illegally, if we look at the number of drug traffickers, human traffickers, and other illegal activity that's ongoing, and our current inability to fully stop this trafficking and the migrant caravan, there is a clear, unmistakable, empirical basis for declaring a national emergency.
So, Wes, in your view, from a military perspective, do you view this as a national emergency?
It really is. And there will be people in the progressive parts of the Democrat Party that will deny this. But look at this. The Pew Research Foundation said that between January and June of last year, in addition to all the single people crossing the border that they apprehended, we don't know how many they did not apprehend, but there were 49,000 family members who, between January and June, tried to cross the border and were apprehended. In the last 3 months of 2018, there were 66,000 families in the last 3 months trying to cross the border. Yeah. I think that
say
constitutes
that
66,000. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was only 49,000 from January to June. And the plight of these people also constitutes an emergency, I believe. But in addition to that, DHS, Department of Homeland Security, last week said that last year there were over 2,000 illegal entries into the United States that they caught that were either terrorist or suspected terrorists. People on their watch list, for example, over 2,000. Not all of them came through the southern border, but in all the different borders, you know, by air, land, and sea, there were over 2,000 suspected terrorists apprehended. I think that in and of itself can justify it being called an emergency.
That, we know that terrorists use migration flows. They've done that in Europe extensively. They determine the migration routes. By the way, this is as old as history itself. They determine migration routes and utilize the migration routes as a basis upon which they can gain entry. So
they also work extensively with the Islamic terror groups. Work extensively with the drug cartels of Latin America that can fund these groups. So who are also taking advantage of. So when we say that the drug cartels are taking advantage of, and we take that as a given that they would, which I think everyone, depending, even if you're against the wall, you would say that you realize the drug cartels. Those drug cartels are documented to be working with Hezbollah, using the Hezbollah banks, using Hezbollah funding. So they're working hand in hand with Islamic terrorists. Again, you've got to be clear about who you're talking about here. Not so much Mexicans. So we're talking Central Americans, and where it's most difficult right now. And that's unfortunate. But the U.S., we could build this wall and we could do more humanitarian work in Central America so that we don't need to see these flows of people. One in three women who tries to make it across is sexually assaulted. I mean, that's a horrifically high rate that we can't prevent. I mean, that's happening somewhere along the route. And then these kids are coming very sick. Kids are sick, and then they're in the care of Border Patrol, which are not doctors. And that's not their job, the Border Patrol agents. And then you see the deaths of children because there's not adequate medical resources. Because we have, again, you can get to point A, you can't get to point B. And I don't think the right call is to, let's build lots of hospitals on the southern border and take everyone in. We can't do that as a country.
So if you're just joining us, here's what's happened. The president has just announced, the White House just announced, that the president's going to visit the U.S.-Mexico border on Thursday. This is, he again continues to request the funding for the border security.
And I think that's important to note because we're on day 17 of the shutdown. I think you can add at least 3 more days now. So we're going to get to day 20 at least because he's going to go make another plea. At a minimum, he's going to be making a plea, maybe even announcing this move. I mean, so we will see if he announces the national security move or if he is just continuing to put pressure on the Democrats to show them what is happening at our southern border and to show the American people what he really wants to build, because there are sections that are already built so that we understand.
And they're continuing to be built right now. I mean, there is, people need to understand that there are sections of this security fence being put in place now. So it's not like this isn't happening. But obviously this has become a political issue. And as we've said on this broadcast for a month and a half, the fact is this is not a real budget item. Not that $25 billion is not significant, but as Harry has said before, the first $5 billion allocation for this year is less than 0.1%. And if you expanded the whole $25 billion,
less than 0.5% of the 2019 federal
$20 billion
budget.
Sitting in a discretionary fund right now. I mean, so this is politics. Understand what this is. But it's our national security at stake. And I think, how do you argue against putting a border security in place just if it was just to stop the drug trafficking and the sex trafficking?
Yeah.
I mean, right there. The sex trafficking that comes up through the border is unreal, folks. I mean, it's a serious problem. We've done a lot of legal work on that issue and dropped them out of legislation. All right, let's go ahead and take some phone calls.
Yeah, Dan's calling in from Wisconsin on line one. Dan, welcome to JCEO Live.
Hi, Dan.
Yes, good morning.
Hey.
My position is a national emergency will ultimately happen because of 25% of our government is shut down. When it starts to interfere with our infrastructure, our airports, and personnel that probably won't continue to work for nothing, I believe that it's heading toward that. The gridlock is going to continue, it looks like. There's issues on both sides. But just because of the gridlock and nothing being done, if this continues, and in turn that in itself, I think will rise to the level of a national emergency.
Well, there were reports over the weekend about, and even on Friday, about airports and sick-ins and people calling in sick and trying to make the point. But, again, I think, look, everything you said is valid.
Yeah, well, Than Bennett is our director of government affairs. He's in congressional meetings now, weekly Monday morning meetings, now that Congress is back and we're on the kind of normal schedule, even with the shutdown. And he wrote this, the bills are being, the appropriations bills being considered by the House, remember that's Democrats now, aren't going to resolve any impasse. POTUS is willing to consider DACA or other dim priorities and compromise, but to the point, Democrats are insisting on all or nothing. They will not budge on the wall, so no end in sight on the shutdown. Pretty widespread agreement that POTUS could declare emergency and use military money. Hurdles would be whether it is an emergency and also important other important military projects that would lose out around the world. So there would be, again, the issues you'd have to address immediately.
Yeah, I'm not so concerned about that. I understand what Than said. I'm glad Than gave us an update. And that's why, by the way, at the ACLJ, we don't just talk about the issues. Our team's up there with the leadership right now, meeting with members of the House. But having said that, I don't think it's not a monetary issue. It's not where this $25 billion comes out and it's going to impact other projects. The legal question is going to be whether it's a national emergency or not. I think the case can be made that this is a national emergency. Wes?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And our national security is at stake. The thing that strikes me, Jay, is the irrationality and the hypocrisy of the Democrats who are blocking this. In 2006, they voted for a border wall and 54 Democrat senators. In 2013, they actually voted for $40 billion. In 2013, when Barack Obama was president, the Senate voted for that, and it didn't get anywhere because the House refused to take it up. But think about that. In 2013, the Democrats are saying, yeah, we need $40 billion for the southern border. Now, 2018, earlier this year, they proposed $25 billion. But what they're doing now, they simply want to deny President Trump a win. It is blatantly political, and they're putting our national security at risk.
Harry, quickly, 15 seconds here. Do you think that'll be the central part, though, of any legal argument of whether it's, in fact, a national emergency?
Absolutely. In addition to which, you will have to look at the number of terrorists who are in the caravans, and you would look at the cost of holding migrants, 10,000, sorry.
Yeah, 10,000.
Or 50,000, actually.
Is it 50?
Yeah.
Wow. All right, back with your calls at 800-684-3110 in just a moment.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up, at aclj.org.
All right, so the president's going to go to the southern border on Thursday, which, as Jordan said, that means for sure that this shutdown continues till Thursday. Yeah. And there's a lot of talk right now about the president utilizing a declaration of national emergency, which is both the statutory basis, 50 U.S.C., that's United States Code, Section 1621, or the Constitution itself. The commander-in-chief has that authority. I think it's worth playing again. This is the new chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, was asked this question by George Stephanopoulos, and here's what the congressman had to say.
Does President Trump have the ability, have the authority to declare a national emergency, have the military build his wall?
Well, unfortunately, the short answer is yes. There is a provision in law that says the president can declare an emergency. It's been done a number of times, but primarily it's been done to build facilities in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Well, that doesn't mean it can't be done in the United States, Harry Hutchinson.
Absolutely, because what we're talking about here is literally an invasion of civilians who are engaged in drug trafficking, human trafficking, and the like, and who are attempting to cross illegally, and in some cases, they are threatening Border Patrol agents. So it is a huge problem. It's a problem that's gone on for decades, and it is time to address it. And it's also important to remember that the cost of the migrant caravans are being borne disproportionately by southern states, particularly Texas, New Mexico, and obviously California as well.
Let's go right to the phone. Stuart's calling in from Seattle, Washington, on line 6. Stuart, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Stuart.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call. I think the president has the power of the pen to put that funding in down there, emergency funding, moves that off the table so Congress can do something with the budget and get these people back to work. And, you know, he has the authority to do it, so let's get this done.
So you support the president utilizing his national emergency powers if necessary?
Hey, the drugs are a problem. My kid's in detox right now from heroin. I'm not going to
I understand.
Deal with it.
Yeah. No, it is a huge, the opioid crisis and the heroin trafficking and the sex trafficking coming in is usually significant. I appreciate you calling in, Stuart. I think this is a national emergency. So the question is going to be legally what will happen. And here's my guess on what happens. The president, if he does decide to exercise his authority, what I think you'll see is you'll see a legal challenge, and probably being California, so it may quickly go to the Supreme Court. I think the president carries the day, Harry.
I think that's precisely correct.
We're going to be in there fighting for this. It's that important.
Because I think if you look at the Supreme Court, the composition of the Supreme Court, a majority of the justices believe in the rule of law. They believe in the original meaning of the text, rather than creative living constitutionalism, which has characterized the adjudication by some justices of the Supreme Court and has characterized adjudication by the Ninth Circuit, which obviously includes California.
So the question becomes, will there be a court challenge? Answer, probably yes. Will there be a fight? Yes. Will it end up in the Supreme Court? Probably yes. I think that's the way it looks.
Yeah, I think who knows what lower courts do. They probably start out in the Ninth Circuit, so imagine there that they'd likely rule against the president. And then, as we've said in a lot of these cases, like the ability, like the travel ban cases, which we were so concerned, oh, can you call it a travel ban? Yeah, absolutely, is what the Supreme Court said. The president has the power to do that. Now there's a change in the court. You've got Kavanaugh now on the court as well. So, again, how does that impact things? I think, probably positively for the president when you're looking at presidential power, because the administrations that they served under President George W. Bush had a broad view of presidential power. Barack Obama continued that broad view of presidential power with all the executive orders he did, like on DACA and issues like that. And so I think it would not be bizarre that this president, President Trump, would also continue on those views of a broad executive power to act unilaterally when they believe it is necessary, when they are so authorized. And when you have an act called the National Emergencies Act of 1976, it's a time when things are certainly authorized. Let's go to Robert in Tallahassee, Florida, on line 4. I think it's an interesting question. Robert, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hello. Hey, Robert. Yeah, my question is, practically speaking, how much of a wall or the wall can be expected to be built within the next 2 years, because I'm thinking that if President Trump were not to be reelected, then the incoming president, whoever it might be, might say, I'm not going to fund another penny of it.
Well, look, I think that the reality is, I mean, you have to look at the engineering and how long it's going to take. But do I think the whole wall could be built in 2 years?
If you unleash $25 billion?
Yes.
Immediately? So where you didn't have to do it in these
pieces? I don't know that for a fact. But could another president come in and undo it? Sure. But is that president going to run on this? I mean, think about this. the new incoming president says, I am going to take down the wall's up in 60% of the area and the technology's covering another 20% of the area and there's 20% not done in 36 months. And I don't know the time frame, but I'm saying this. So a challenger to the president is going to come in and say, my first order of business is going to be, I'm going to spend money now to take the wall down. I'm going to remove the wall and open up the border. Now, let me tell you something. You may get the hard left on that, Wes, but you're not going to get the rest of the country.
No, you're not. And
no
way. Here's the deal, Jay. They're so disingenuous, and the Democrats are really trivializing a very important issue, because prior to President Trump becoming the president, three different times they have voted for a wall on the southern border. So it's not about that. And probably the next president, if it were to be a Democrat, would actually be for it. And oddly enough, the Democrats in the House and the Senate would support that person simply because they're not Donald Trump. Adam Smith earlier, who said that the president does have the authority to declare an emergency and use the Pentagon funding, went on to say that he doesn't believe that it would improve border security and therefore it would be a waste of money. But think about it. Last week, the Customs and Border Patrol agents testified that in the places where there is presently a wall, that illegal crossings are down 95%. The wall is effective. You look at Israel, the wall between Egypt and Israel, or the wall on the West Bank. They have eliminated terrorism coming across those walls because the wall is there. Walls absolutely work. It's why the White House has a fence that's iron and masonry, and it's why the Vatican has a wall, for example.
Yeah, let's play. This is what the congressman said again about the national emergency aspect of it.
And in this case, I think the president would be wide open to a court challenge saying, where's the emergency? You have to establish that in order to do this. But beyond that, this would be a terrible use of Department of Defense dollars.
Why would it be a terrible use of Department of Defense dollars? I mean, I don't understand that at all.
Yeah.
So that's number one. Number two, he'd be wide open to a challenge. I'm sure they will challenge it. I mean, we're living in naive land if we don't think they're going to challenge it. But I think the court would give deference to the president, Harry, just constitutionally.
Absolutely. So I think it's important to recognize that the president's powers are not constitutionally limited by the National Emergencies Act of 1976, and presidents of the United States have historically exercised their discretion and their implied powers to declare an emergency. Hence, there is clear precedent favoring the president's discretion in this arena.
All right,
so we've got an update for you, too, on that doctor in Ohio. I want to make sure you all know the latest. We were saying she was a bit of a ghost. Well, finally, Friday, after we filed our formal complaint, we received acknowledgement. We filed that complaint with the Zionist Organization of America to revoke her license permanently with the Ohio Board of Medical Examiners. She apologized, but within her apology, she added this line. I became incensed at the suffering of the Palestinians under the Israeli occupation. The injustice and brutality of the occupation continues to concern me, and I believe every champion of human rights owes it to humanity to work towards a just and peaceful resolution. You remember when she said she was going to write about the Holocaust, and she wrote hashtag sorry, not sorry? Seems, again, that was in her latest apology she has to attack, and there's more coming from her tweets and notes that we'll get to when we come back from the break.
Yeah, but we're going to be doing a follow-up on that. Back with more in a moment.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family. Become a member and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, welcome back to the second half hour of the broadcast, folks. We're talking about the president utilizing a declaration of national emergency under 50 U.S.C. Section 1621 regarding the southern border. The president's going to arrive in the southern border at the southern border on Thursday. But I also want to give an update at the top of this half hour as to the case that we're involved in involving this doctor in Ohio, who we filed a complaint with, along with the Zionist Organization of America, because there's been some more information that's come out on her this weekend that's very, very troubling. So this is an update on that, then we'll get back to this.
First of all, her apology was disastrous, to say the least. I can't believe her lawyer's statement, or her lawyer allowed her to put this kind of apology out when her ability to ever practice medicine again is in jeopardy with the Ohio State Board of Medical Examiners. So she finally did respond, came out of the hiding on Friday, and put out this statement. Let me read you the part that I think is why it's such a fake apology. She said, "I visited Israel and the Palestinian territories every summer throughout my adolescent years. I became incensed at the suffering of the Palestinians under the Israeli occupation. The injustice and brutality of the occupation continue." So she, again, continues to use terms that are pretty, again, inciting. So injustice and brutality of an occupation continues to concern me. I believe every champion of human rights owes it to humanity to work towards a just and peaceful resolution of the crisis. So, again, that is a fake apology. Not just coming right out and saying what I said was wrong and absolutely troubling and I was young and I don't hold these views anymore. But no, she can't go and just say that. She must add in a statement about the unjust and brutal occupation that continues to concern her. This is why it continues to concern me about her practicing medicine ever in Ohio, because clearly the first time she blamed it on fake Twitter accounts. Now she's acknowledging it as real. It really is her statement. But we've uncovered more. So even after she issued this Friday statement trying to apologize, another tweet, and we can put it on the screen, I think, for our Facebook and Periscope viewers. So the tweet text is, "Studying for my med micro final, I came across this. Clearly, I pay attention in class and write very useful notes." So she takes a picture of the note, and the note says, "People who support Israel," not just Jews she's attacking this time, but everyone who supports Israel, "should have their immune cells killed so they can see how it feels to not be able to defend yourself from foreign invaders." So she's already said she wants to prescribe Jews the wrong medicine. In her apology, she calls it a brutal occupation continuing in Israel, even when she could have just apologized, maybe saved her medical license. Nope, didn't do that.
Nope.
Had to continue the politics. And now we find out there's going to be more, obviously, in her record, this time attacking anyone who supports Israel, not just Jews.
Let me tell you what we're doing. I've instructed our legal staff this morning and this afternoon to send a follow-up letter. We'll be joined, I'm sure, with our friends at the Zionist Organization of America, putting this new information out there. Any information that we gather, this was through the same website, Canary Mission. Canary Mission got this information. They do a very good job of uncovering the stuff. We're going to continue to press on this because this is outrageous. The license should be revoked. There's a process you have to go through for revocation. We understand that. She should be accorded due process. But once that due process is done, based on the evidence submitted and her continued statements, how would you like to be that person being treated by this doctor? Wes, you said something the other day. We'll get back to the border security in the next segment. And that is, in war zones that you've been in, medical professionals treated terrorists.
Yes, absolutely. They would have people brought in who had just recently killed U.S. soldiers, and yet they got wounded in the battle, and these American military doctors would work feverishly to save the life of a terrorist. That's what doctors do. But with this particular doctor, this is not a one-off tweet that she did. This is a series of tweets over a 4 to 5 year period, and her apology is a backhanded apology. And I tell you, she said that the Israeli occupation is brutal. I tell you what's brutal. A doctor trying to kill their patients, that's brutal.
Yeah, that is. And that's why you shouldn't be practicing medicine. The American Center for Law and Justice, not just talking about it, taking legal action. We'll be back with more, including your calls, in just a moment.
Yep, 1-800-684-3110. Back to the main topic at hand. Should the president invoke his national emergency powers and build the wall? 1-800-684-3110. As the shutdown continues, and we heard from our government affairs team, no end in sight. We'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live.
It's a critical time for our nation and for the world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important than right now. At the ACLJ, we're engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, defending human life, standing up for our good friend Israel, working to uncover the deep state, the massive corruption in Washington, battling to end the genocide of Christians in many parts of the world, and a firm commitment to back constitutional efforts to protect our country from radical Islamic terrorists. You can learn more about the mission and work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ, become a member, and make a difference as we work to protect your constitutional and religious freedoms. You can become a member of the ACLJ online. Sign up right now, aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. We're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Let's go right to the phones. We gave you the update on the medical case. We're now talking about the president possibly utilizing his emergency powers, declaration of a national emergency by the president, which is both constitutionally based but also under 50 U.S.C. Section 1621.
Yep. Let's go to Lou, who's calling in from Israel, U.S. citizen in Israel right now. Lou, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hey, Lou.
Yeah. Hi, Jay. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Just wanted to give it a little bit of a different perspective, you know, from the Israeli side.
Sure.
As you well know, the wall and the fence that we built here actually does work. The terrorist attacks have gone down by somewhere between 95% to 98% over the years, and so it does work. And we support President Trump building this wall, and it's become as you mentioned earlier, it's a political football where the Democrats supported it years ago, and now just because it's Trump, they're against it, and so. So let me support it. By the way, I do want to make a quick comment about your previous segment with the doctor.
Yep.
The only occupation that was here was by the Jordanians.
That's exactly right.
Were they illegally occupied what the world calls the West Bank, or what Jordan called the West Bank, but what we call Judea and Samaria, and historically it's always been known as Judea and Samaria.
Right.
And they occupied it for 19 years. That has always been Jewish land for thousands of years. So
there's no question about it. I'm going to put you on hold. I'm going to send you a book that I wrote called Jerusalem, which gives a legal, historic, biblical account of why Israel is not only the Jewish state, but that the boundaries include Judea and Samaria. So I'm going to send that to you. Hang on the line. I appreciate the call because you're living it. Now, the fact is, from a policy standpoint, I don't think it's controversial, Harry, at this point. That walls work, border security fences work.
Right.
Now in Israel, part of it's concrete, but a lot of it also would be a concrete base with a more fencing or steel slats, so they can see what's going on both sides.
So opposition to the wall is based in pure ideology and pure fiction. The claim that walls don't work defies the experience of the Israelis, it defies the experience of the Vatican, and it defies the experience around the White House itself. Walls do work, and the claim that walls don't work represents an attempt to recreate imaginary history. Even the Democrats used to support the creation, the building of a wall. What happened? Did the facts change? No. In fact, the facts today support building a wall even more so than in the past. Why? Because drug trafficking has increased. Human trafficking has increased. And we have the threat of terrorism, which is omnipresent and has not gone away. And so the claim that walls don't work makes no sense. And average working class Americans should reject these falsehoods expeditiously.
Yeah, well, Mick Mulvaney, the acting acting chief of staff, made this comment yesterday on Jake Tapper's program.
One of the most frustrating things, Jake, about the meeting that we had yesterday was that we can't even agree on the basic facts. The DHS Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen tried to point out that we had arrested 17,000 criminals at the southern border so far, actually just last year. And Nancy Pelosi simply refused to accept that fact. She said, those are your facts. And trying to make the point, there are not your facts and my facts. There are just facts. If you can't even have a basic understanding of the facts, it's going to be very difficult to come to an agreement.
That's why the president's looking at using his authority under the National Emergency Act. And again, Wes, this would not be, Colonel Smith, this would not be the first time a president's done it.
No, it's been done in the past. It's part of his Article II powers as president, and using the Pentagon funds is part of his authority as the commander-in-chief. But the Democrats, they're trivializing a very serious issue, but when they trivialize it, they're so disingenuous about it because, as Harry said, they voted for border walls and for border funding in the past. Whenever Nancy Pelosi says, as she did at a press conference on Friday, okay, I'll give the president a dollar for the wall, this is a serious issue. People are out of work. The border is not secure. And yet she's sort of making a joke that, okay, I'll give him $1. This is a serious issue, and they are trivializing it.
No question.
And you know, just look at the moral issue. She says it's a moral issue. Yes, indeed it is. It's a moral issue not to have the wall in light of drug traffickers, in light of the thousands of minor young girls who are brought across the border for sex trafficking, in light of gangs, in light of national security. Yes, it is a moral issue. It's immoral not to have a border wall.
Wes wrote a great piece up at ACLJ.org on that. I think it was the 5 reasons. Why it is a moral issue. And other people have picked that up. And I think that's, again, part of our policy positions that we're advocating here at the ACLJ. Let's go ahead and go back to the phones, 800-684-3110.
Yeah, back to the phones we go. I think Jerry in Rhode Island online too. Jerry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, Jerry.
Hello, team.
Yes.
I'm wondering if Secretary Nielsen was allowed to give an Oval Office side by side with President Trump, tell us what was said in the Situation Room that the Democrats wouldn't listen to. I wonder if we all can get to hear what was struck to be said there.
Well, I don't think that – I think that no they cut her off anyways. I mean, I think that the entire time, yet again, they tried it twice. It was reported that Nancy Pelosi said, I don't believe the facts that you're presenting. And Secretary Nielsen responded, these aren't things that we're creating. These are just the facts. I mean, it's just the basics of what's happening at the border, and I disagree with your facts. So you see that we live in this time – now, where facts are meaningless, it is politics. The politics is what is important. And what we know and what Than Bennett, our government affairs director, has confirmed for us today is that the Democrats are unwilling to budge on the wall. It doesn't matter whatever statistic you give them, whatever number you give them, whatever information you give them, whatever plea that you try to make to them, they aren't budging right now. The government is shut down day 17, and I think we could count to day 20 because we know the president's heading to the southern border on Thursday. So we're going to at least get to day, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21 of the shutdown likely. And whether or not he's just using that as another opportunity to make it clear to the American people why we're continuing this partial shutdown, which, again, is very partial, or is he going to add on and announce that he's going to use this Emergency Act? We don't know that yet, but we do know is that he is traveling to the southern border Thursday.
If he decides to utilize the act, the Democrats are already threatening to file a lawsuit. That will be defended by the Department of Justice. I will tell you this, that I've authorized our national security team to draft a brief supporting the president's declaration of national emergency and his statutory and constitutional authority if, in fact, it goes to court. So we'll be ready if it does. Let's go ahead and take another phone call here.
Yeah, back to the phones we go. Let's go to Skip in California, online 5. Skip, welcome to JSecure Live.
Hi, Skip.
Hey, guys. You mentioned several times, and I've heard it on news reports, that prior Democratic support has been strong for a southern wall. Do you know how many Democrats would actually vote for the wall if they're not held hostage to their own party and having to vote in a block for fear of losing their campaign funding in the future?
Because you can't ignore that. So because of all the predicates you said, I don't suspect it will get many votes, although there's been some. I mean, Joe Manchin in the Senate said it over the weekend that he thinks this needs to happen. Politically, what do you think, Harry? I'll ask that to Jordan.
Long term, a wall could be beneficial for the Democrats, but most politicians, and clearly I think this is true of most Democrats, they are consumed by short term thinking. And so opposition to the wall does provide short term advantages in terms of political funding. Certainly, it ignores the risk that the American people are exposed to. And certainly it ignores the wishes of middle Americans. But the Democrats have had a history of ignoring the wishes of middle Americans. And I think long term, it will probably backfire against them. But in the short run, I think the political funding will be there as long as they remain firm in their opposition against the wall.
What do you think about the political side? How is it playing politically right now?
I think the liberal base, the Democrats, don't want the wall. So they're not being hurt. The liberal base is not being hurt. I think that mainstream Americans who are right down the middle, who vote in presidential elections, who don't really vote in midterm elections and things like that, they're probably the ones most with their hands thrown up in the air, saying, you know what? Again, Congress is, you know, they're taking the oath, they're swearing in last week, they're making these statements about the president, and they're doing it in a shutdown government. You elect a divided government, guess what we get? A government that can't even function at all. Yeah. It wasn't easy to function under all Republican government. And now we literally have a divided just House and Senate. I mean, you still have a Republican president and a Republican Senate. And you cannot function at all. It is Nancy Pelosi cannot lead her party. She got elected speaker, but she doesn't even speak on behalf of all Democrats. She speaks on behalf of Pelosi Democrats.
Right.
Then there's Democrats who are more conservative than her, and Democrats are a lot more liberal than her. And I think those more liberal Democrats are the ones who are keeping things totally off.
What do you think, Wes, quickly?
Syndrome is at work, and they are not rational. They do not want to be confused by the facts. Please don't confuse me with facts. My mind's made up, and that's where they are. They're intransigent, and it's a sad, sad commentary on the Democratic Party and their liberal base.
All right, we're coming up to the last segment of the broadcast. We're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Any topic you want to discuss, we open it up at the end here. We'll give you an update again on the situation with that doctor, but we'll take your calls on a variety of topics. 1-800-684-3110. Get your calls in.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of the many ACLJ members who stand with us, we've seen great success over the years as we engage in legal, legislative, and cultural issues that matter most to you and your families. The ACLJ is on the front lines when it comes to protecting your freedoms, defending Christians and their faith in this country and abroad, standing up for human life, battling big abortion, and working to cut off taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture, and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.
right, welcome back to the broadcast. Everyone, last program, that means we open the lines for your calls on questions you have. We're going to go right to the phones in the order that people called. Jordan, let's go right to it.
Yeah, first we will start off with Randy in California on line 6. Randy, welcome to JCKO Live.
Hi, Randy.
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call. Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Got a question for you. So I'm not sure if you saw in the news here recently in California, we did have a police officer from Newman, California, who was killed by an illegal alien.
Yes.
So I would agree there is a national crisis. It is a health and safety issue, as your previous caller stated, regarding the illegal drugs that come into our country, California being one of those.
There's no question that when you look at the situation with that horrific situation with the officer that was killed by the person that was in the United States illegally, this goes as to the fabric of what the problem is. And again, these are examples. There are many. I think the number was, what was it, Harry, 66,000?
There were more than 50,000 illegals being held per day in the United States at a cost of $200 per day. $10 million per day, roughly $3.6 billion per year. I mean, and that is simply the individuals that have been apprehended, does not include those individuals who have not been apprehended. So this case in California.
And the Democrats offered $1.3 billion or $1.6 billion.
Right.
So we had $1.3 billion, $1.6 billion to 5 point, what did you say it was, 3.6?
It was 3.6.
Do the math on that. There's your budget, pretty much.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Wes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why, folks, this isn't about where the money is.
No.
The money's there.
It's a political issue for the Democrats. You know, to the caller's point, whenever your loved one gets killed by someone who's here illegally, either through drunk driving or something else, think about the little girl in Houston over the weekend who was killed by gang gunfire in Houston, Texas. Just looking at the gangs coming across the border, the drug cartels, the human trafficking, those who come over here and break our laws, who drive drunk, those kinds of things, all of those things together make for a crisis in our nation, which I think lends some credence to the president thinking about declaring a national emergency.
Right. Absolutely. All right, next call.
So the legal battle, what would it look like? Ruth in California on line 3. Ruth, welcome to JCKO Live.
Hey, Ruth.
Hi, thank you for taking my
call.
How long do we think that the challengers to President Trump's presidential powers, how long can they hold that up in court?
Well, here's what would happen. If the president utilized 50 U.S.C. Section 1621, and also his constitutional authority, and implemented it, I would expect, and the Democrats have already said that there'll be a constitutional challenge made immediately. That'll be at the U.S. District Court, my guess is somewhere in California, is probable. That case could move really quickly because it's not a question of a lot of, there's not depositions and discovery, it's a question of facts. The government will lay out what the basis upon, in the declaration, if the president were to do this, he would lay out what the basis upon which the national emergency exists. That would be the predicate, because what you have to, under the law, is to establish a national emergency. Then you're going to have a court, what, adjudicate whether the president's correct or not? I mean, there's a whole question there about whether that would be a separation of powers issue. So there's a lot of issues here. I think it would move rather quickly. That's my view.
Like the travel ban cases within months?
Yeah, months. I think it moves
months,
quickly.
Not
yes.
Like the normal.
I mean, the president decides to exercise his authority to declare something a national emergency, it's not going to sit in the courts for 2 years.
No, probably less than a few months.
Yeah, and it moves, but probably right to the Supreme Court, and it doesn't start at the Supreme Court, but I think it gets up to the Supreme Court pretty quickly. We're going to be ready, but I expect that to happen if the president does, in fact, declare a national emergency. He hasn't yet, but he is going to the border on Thursday.
Dan in San Antonio, Texas, on line one. Dan, welcome to JCKO Live.
Hey, Dan.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Appreciate all that you guys are doing. Well, I have a question that just I never hear anybody bringing it up. The advantage here, this is a shovel-ready project which would create all sorts of jobs, and so all those funds from the supplies and the workforce goes right back into our economy. It seems like they would want that.
You know, you bring up a really good point, Dan, and I'll go to our economics professor, Professor Hutchinson, on that, but the impact on the economy, of course, will be significant.
I think the caller is absolutely correct, but the Democrats are quite prepared to give up jobs, good, high-paying jobs in America, in exchange for the elusive pursuit of an illusion, which is political power. And so they are willing to exchange the facts, the reality, for political power. And I think, as Wesley correctly points out, it's all part of the Trump derangement syndrome. It's not about the money. It's not about the jobs. For the Democrats, it's not about stopping drug trafficking, human trafficking, and the like. It's all about stopping the president.
And I think that's exactly what this is. At the end of the day, that's what this is all about. Everybody recognizes the needs for national security here. And again, it's not the money that's at issue here. But it'll be an interesting legal move. Let's go ahead and take another call.
Yeah, back to the phones we go. Tara Lisa in Arkansas, line two. Tara Lisa, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, Jay. I was wondering, when these issues come up, why can't just the way you all play back all these facts that they've said themselves, can you just play them back to them and let them hear themselves, let them hear the facts that are being said?
Exactly what we will do. We're going to, in our brief, if this goes to, first of all, if the president declares a national emergency, and if it goes to litigation, we will lay out all of the facts. But let me tell you what Senator Graham said. I think this is perfect. Senator Graham was on some of the programs this weekend. Here's what he said about all this.
Right now, the people running the show on the left are radical liberal Democrats who don't see a border security problem. They see their own government being the problem, not the illegal immigrant. Until that changes, we'll never get anywhere. There's a deal to be had here, but it will include a wall. And if there's no wall in this deal, we'll never have a deal.
There you have it. That was Senator Graham, pretty emphatic on that point.
This, though, would. I mean, this national emergency actually would then take that off the table.
Yes.
I mean, it would take it off the table as an issue to reopening the government. Now, what the Democrats are still trying to do is, of course, get funding for abortion and a repeal of the Mexico City policy and billions of dollars to International Planned Parenthood once again. So will they also keep the government shut down over that? I mean, there's so many issues they could continue the shutdown over. I think the president, when he says it could go on for a long time, he realizes that, let's say you handled the wall, there could be three more issues that they continue to shut down the government over.
Yep.
If you look at their proposed budget that was passed by the House Democrats, Janie is calling from Florida for the final call of the day, I think. Janie, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air. Hey.
Thank you, Jay, for all you guys do, and we pray for you. And it's raining.
Okay, sure.
This morning, Judge Napolitano was on Fox, and he said something about the national security declared, but he was also mentioned that he might come up against private property issues. Is that a fact?
Well, you're talking about private property issues. In other words, do you have the authority to build on certain lands? Well, it would be federal lands or subject probably to eminent domain if they don't already have it. But where the border security fence is, generally, that's not an issue. I mean, it's generally your property doesn't run up to the border. It may the states have to consent, but I wouldn't see that as the legal issue.
No, I mean, I think it could perhaps be a small issue, but if you look at the wall itself, 98-99% of it could be built without legal issues, and then there's always the possibility of invoking eminent domain.
Yeah, if they needed to. All right, so let me tell you this. Jordan's going to give you a quick update again on the doctor situation in Ohio.
Yeah, that's right. So we've sent a letter, and it was acknowledged that it was a formal complaint, not just a letter, but a formal complaint filed by the ACLJ and the Zionist Organization of America with the Ohio Board of Medical Examiners. Laura Kolob came out of hiding, tried to issue an apology. I say tried to issue an apology because in it, she still declares the occupiers and the horrendous Israel, and she didn't just apologize, let's put it that way. And now more tweets are coming out about her, from her, where she's not just attacking Jews, but people who support Israel losing their immune cells as well. So the fight continues in that situation as we await the Ohio Medical Board's decision.
It has been our mission for nearly 30 years. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. There's not a better time for you to join the American Center for Law and Justice. By standing with us, you can make a tremendous difference in our country and our culture and the ongoing fight for freedom. Become an ACLJ member today. It's easy to do. Just go online, sign up at aclj.org.